This is Mythical.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Forget the Oscars. Today we're declaring the Oscar Mayer winner for Best Food Movie. This is A Hot Dog is a Sandwich.
Ketchup is a smoothie.
Yeah, I put ice in my cereal, so what?
That makes no sense.
A hot dog is a sandwich.
A hot dog is a sandwich.
What? Welcome to our podcast, A Hot Dog is a Sandwich, the show where we break down the world's biggest food debates. I'm your host, Josh Scherer.
And I'm your host, Nicole Hendizadeh.
And today we're joined by the Babish Culinary Universe's own Andrew Ray. Andrew's one part chef, one part filmmaker, a generous dash of irreverent YouTube personality, a heaping handful of bourbon enthusiast, a cyclist and karaoke singer to taste, and no, I didn't just read that from his Twitter bio. I did, Andrew, I read that from your Twitter bio. His show, Binging with Babish, recently celebrated its 5-year anniversary of exploring the question, what does the food from film and television actually taste like? This makes him the perfect teammate for today's topic. He's also my friend, and I owe the internet a tattoo of his face somewhere on my body, but more on that later. Andrew, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, man. And major kudos for being able to do that in one take. I can't read through a single sentence to save my life in one take. So really, just big kudos.
I really appreciate that. I found out that if I lean into the attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and try and just like use that as a sort of superpower that hinders my life in a lot of other ways, I can get through a lot of script in one take.
Oh, see, I've been trying to medicate away my problems and you're leaning into them. That's the key. You got to lean into them. That's the Kanye West way.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Let them consume you and ultimately drive you into the ground. But for now, hey, let's record a podcast.
Yeah. Alrighty, we're getting into real issues. Let's talk food and movies.
Let's do it. Okay, so I mean, we figured, right? You've made your entire career on YouTube after bringing the food from movies and TV to life. So we were hoping that you would go on record as saying what the greatest food movie of all time is. Are you willing to do that?
Yes, I'm willing to do that. And just fair warning, and this is not me name dropping, even though it totally is. But, I'm a dear, John Favreau is a dear friend of mine.
I met Roy Choi once and he gave me a bro hug. So that's something.
Oh, he's the best.
I've
got nothing.
Ron Artest in a bathroom. He was pretty good for the Lakers and Bulls,
I mean, we all have our.
Pierce Brosnan winked at me one time.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Sorry,
go ahead.
We all have our biases. But just contractually and personally and spiritually, I have to say, Chef. If I'm actually going to answer that question, I think I have to give the crown to Big Night. They all love food, and not just showing food, not just, pornographically, showing you pretty shots of food. They love food as a communal object, as a thing that brings people together, as a thing that soothes relationships. Chef and Big Night in particular are about the unifying power of food. And that's why they're at the top of my list. Tampopo definitely deserves its place on that list. I think more because it's inventive more than anything else. But it's a great movie, and I do recommend giving it a watch when there aren't so many interesting documentaries on HBO to watch, which is never because they have so many great documentaries.
There's so many. There's so much good stuff. Footage. But the thing you're talking about, Chef, I worry that we may all have the same answer, which might be Chef. Well, Nicole, what's your answer?
No, my answer is not Chef.
What is it?
My answer is the wonderful movie Waiting, ..
Okay.
I've learned
a different
that
sort of food movie.
I've learned that my food movies are like socio-political economic like food movies. Yeah. Like I loved Super Size Me. That's mm-hmm. like probably one of my other ones. And I also really like The Platform. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of The Platform, but it's pretty much a like allegory about like trickle down economics, how like these people at the top of the platform have like a huge Venetian style feast and then it trickles down 200 levels. It's a really, yeah, I guess like my food movies are all like weirdly political.
That's
just because I enjoy it.
That's a way cooler answer.
I think it's
answer.
Really cool.
Sorry, but like that's a way cooler
answer. No, I mean, one, Andrew, you're not nearly as cool as Nicole. So that makes sense. Yeah. But no, I mean, the movies that Andrew's talking about of like chef, like showing a ton of reverence for food where like the food is almost the main character in a sense, right? It's mm-hmm. about all these characters, you know, Jon Favreau, his son, fantastic John Leguizamo in there.
Sure.
But, you know, the food is playing such a central role.
Yeah.
Whereas in the movies you're talking about, food is a lens through which to view the world.
Yes,
which I
exactly.
really love, because, I mean, like I said, I wrote this, let's talk about ISIS more. I wrote this article. I mean, the reason I got into food writing, you know, especially I started writing about food as it related to politics and social justice. So yes. I wrote a lot about agriculture and stuff like that and public policy. The reason I got into that is because food has always been the most important thing in my life. Mm-hmm. So every single thing I see in the world, I kind of see it through the lens of food. So like, for instance, right, when the Super Bowl comes around or the big game comes around every year, I don't know what we can say, and everyone eats chicken wings, where does the rest of the chicken go? You know, and then I really start digging into that. This is just a curious 14-year-old me stuffing his face with chicken wings. Mm-hmm. And I start Googling it and then find out that, you know, all the thighs and legs are shipped to Russia and China. And then all of the feathers are shipped to Malaysia for processing.
What?
And then a lot of the chicken that we ship to China and Russia actually gets processed and then shipped back to the U.S. So like any single story out there this is a weird tangent. Bear with me. Any story out there becomes a food story to me.
Mm-hmm.
So things like, you know, I mean, Super Size Me or even like Fast Food Inc. I mean, there's so many great food documentaries like that that can teach you so much about the world through the lens of food.
No, I totally agree. Have you ever heard of a movie called Ramen Girl? Have you guys ever heard of a movie called Ramen Girl?
I've not, no.
Okay. Okay, hear me out. Brittany Murphy, she gets left in Japan, her boyfriend leaves her, and then she goes into a ramen shop and it's raining and she's sad. And then she says, oh my God, ramen? I'm going to become a ramen chef. And then she becomes a ramen chef. That's a good food-centric movie. Don't you agree?
I like it. You know, a show on Netflix that I would highly recommend if you haven't watched it yet is Samurai Gourmet. You ever see that?
No. Mm. What's it about?
It's amazing. If you're, especially if you're ever hungover, if you just need something like really easy for your brain.
Always.
I love easy.
There's no conflict in the show. There's no rising tensions or apex of drama or anything like that in any episode. It is a simple, well-told little linear story that loves food. It's about an old, not old, but retirement age Japanese guy in Tokyo, I think. I don't know where he is, but he retires and he doesn't know what to do with his time, with his life, because he's worked his entire life. And he decides to just channel this samurai that he imagines in his mind that just eats and drinks with wild abandon and enjoys food and dining to its fullest. And he goes to some of the best restaurants in his area. And it's just, now this is an extremely pornographic show. Like the food is up close and gorgeously photographed, gorgeous. And it's just his interior monologue mostly as he's eating. And that's it. It's easy.
I love that.
That sounds right up my alley.
It's sweet and it's just this very, very lovable, adorable old guy. Not that old, retirement age, probably 65, who is just enjoying the hell out of food, like really losing himself to the experience of dining and to being fed and to trying people's craft. It's really lovely. And it kind of reminds me of Chef's Show, which, you know, is Jon Favreau's show, which is a very easy thing to watch because there's no conflict. There's no, it's just a look at food through the lens of different people in the industry.
That's one of the most beautiful things is being able to experience someone else's unbridled joy of food.
Absolutely.
Through a screen. And it's something that like we, not to get like into a meta narrative about food media, but so many people who want to be overly analytical about things or act like they are too cool or too good for certain foods. To me, it like takes away so much from this element of joy, which is what made Chef so beautiful is that they treat a shot of a grilled cheese. The grilled cheese scene in Chef, to me, is one of the most iconic scenes. So for anyone who doesn't know, Chef is a movie, I believe, written and directed by Jon Favreau.
Correct.
Written, directed, and starred in by Jon Favreau. It's like the Sling Blade to Billy Bob Thornton. Chef to Jon Favreau.
We've got to incorporate Sling Blade somehow,
oh,
don't you, Josh?
Oh,
we've got
to bring Sling Blade in somehow.
Oh, we got a Sling Blade fan here.
That's a good food movie.
Huge fan. That's a good
French fried potatoes,
French fried potatoes.
You got to make the French fried potatoes from Sling Blade now.
From the Tasty Cream? I know that movie well.
Oh, that's
yeah,
fantastic.
You really do.
The best part is the lead from Tokyo Drift is the child.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And what's his name plays the villain. What the hell is his name?
I'm not going to reach it.
He's an incredible country singer, that guy. He's so creepy and terrible in that movie. He's like a drunk, you know, abuser, terrible, awful person. And then he's like, in real life, he's an amazing country singer with like a huge following. It's incredible. What the hell's his name? Hang on.
Wait, is Nicole Googling it?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Google it.
Sling Blade.
Well, some folks call it a Kaiser Blade.
Okay,
some
Sling Blade cast.
Blade. Some folks call it a Kaiser Blade.
Okay, looks like Dwight Yoakam.
Dwight Yoakam is a renowned country singer.
I can tell.
That's incredible. Chef, wait, we can't get sidetracked. This is my fault.
Sorry.
So Chef, written, starred, and directed by Jon Favreau. It is all about a chef who won a ton of awards while he was cooking in Miami, and then he moves to Los Angeles to open up a restaurant that he finally gets a ton of investment in. And this is from a restaurant owner played by Dustin Hoffman, which I love watching the dynamic between the chef and the restaurant owner. And then he learns that he doesn't want to be boxed in creatively, and then he has a huge sort of meltdown. He goes off on a food critic, and then he launches on a journey of self-discovery where he starts a food truck, and his son goes along with him, as well as his sous chef from his old restaurant. And then he starts cooking Cuban food. He starts making Cuban sandwiches and that mojo de ajo brined pork, and the medianoches and the fried yuca. And then he drives across the country with his son, finding himself in his relationship with his family along the way, as well as, you know, his purpose. And it's this great, you know, allegory of how food is something that it shouldn't be exalted to a certain level, to the point where it destroys your happiness with it. That was like a huge message that I got from it. And the cinematography like follows that message so much, where so many simple dishes that he cooks are just shot with such like precision and just food pornographic elements. I mean, that spaghetti aglio e olio, which, Andrew, I think that was one of the first like really huge videos on your channel, right?
Yeah, it was actually one of the first episodes, full stop. It was the third episode ever. It definitely caught fire later on. But another great message in that movie that I personally resonates with me personally is in order to find that creative fulfillment, sometimes you have to burn everything down, not literally, but figuratively.
Absolutely.
And you need to start fresh and really examine where you're deriving your happiness from and what gets you out of bed in the morning, and attack that. And sometimes it's hard, and sometimes you have to grind. Like my man goes from, you know, being the head chef at a renowned LA restaurant to cleaning the gunk out of an ancient food truck that he got for free from Robert Downey Jr.
Great role.
You know, that's the fire you have to walk through sometimes to find that creative fulfillment. And as somebody who's had to do that personally, like that really resonates with me. And it's not necessarily a lesson for everyone, but it's definitely an important lesson for people who might be so sort of stuck in their ways that they need a fire under their ass. They need a wake up call.
Yeah. So when you watch Chef, did you like see your own journey reflected in that? Or did you watch Chef and then that sort of reified in your mind that this is my ultimate journey and how it's going to go? Or had you already burned everything down, so to speak?
No, I at the time when I saw Chef, I had not burned anything down yet. And the message didn't really resonate with me till after. That's like the clarity you get from therapy is like, you don't really connect those dots until after you've had a mental health expert help you do it. You know, that was my journey, but, Carl Casper is a life that I think we can all, you know, glean, especially if you're a creative, you can glean some information and some inspiration from.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, my answer for this officially is chef. To me, chef meant so, so, so much. However, for the purpose of this, and this is a great segue, the one food movie that really helped me sort of understand my life's journey, Nicole knows what I'm about to say it's embarrassing, is Eddie's Million Dollar Cook-Off, starring Taylor Ball, and I believe his name is Orlando Brown. This is a Disney movie circa 2004. And it is about Bobby Flay. This is like the rise of Food Network. Bobby Flay had just like stood on the counter at the Iron Chef Japan Stadium and been electrocuted. I don't know if anyone knows that story.
What?
No.
No, Bobby Flay was the first American chef to travel to Iron Chef Japan and compete. I can't remember if he competed against Chen Morimoto or Sakai.
Okay.
But anyways, after he competed, one, there was like a live wire running through a puddle of water and he stepped in it and Bobby Flay gets electrocuted. But Bobby Flay finishes the cook and then he like stands up on the counter victoriously, which apparently in Japanese culinary tradition is incredibly disrespectful. It's kind of disrespectful anywhere you go.
Yeah, just don't stand on tables.
But I would appreciate that American bravado, right? That's like Donald Lowe or...
They electrocute him. Let him stand on a table. They electrocute him, my guy.
That's what I'm saying. Anyways, Bobby Flay is like the starring cameo in this Disney movie. But it is about a kid who is like a baseball phenom. And again, this is Disney Channel original, like not to theaters, straight to the channel on basic cable. So it is very low production budget. But it's about a baseball phenom in high school who has a ton of pressure from his parents to succeed in sports, and of course tons of societal pressure because of his gender and his, you know, presentation and all that. All he wants to do is cook, but he has to hide it from his friends. And so you all see where this
is
going.
It's embarrassing.
And so he joins Home Ec, and, you know, of course, it's everything's Disney-fied, so all his friends are like, Home Ec, that's for girls. You're learning to bake cookies. That's for girls. And then, of course, this is like a mixed-gender sports team because that's how it exists in Disney movies, though it is very rare in the real world. And then, you know, the girl who's a star pitcher on the team is like, girls can do anything a boy can. But anyways, I'm watching this as a 12-year-old who had, you know, really just started to love to cook. But, you know, I was playing multiple sports at the time and grew up in a household with just, you know, a single dad and my brother. And we're only internalizing messages we get from the media. And so watching that was like, oh, my God, I don't have to choose. I'm a large child and I can cook and do sports and love myself. And yeah, then Bobby Flay says like, I'm proud of you to him, but I thought he was saying it to me. And so in my mind, I mean, do they treat food with any respect in that movie? No, absolutely not. His like dish that he really finds his love for cooking in is just this cartoonish purple sludge that he gets in a food fight at school, and this purple sludge drips off the ceiling and he tastes it and he's like, my God, that's the best thing I've ever had.
A lot of people have asked me to make that. Just for the record.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, then you gotta make it.
Man, if you ever...
We gave you two episodes. We got two episodes. We got the Sling Blade mashed potatoes. I mean, French fried potatoes and the purple sludge from Eddie's Million Dollar Cook.
Dude, next collab, you and me, let's make that purple sludge.
Honestly, I would love to. I can make any purple sludge
He makes it every morning anyways.
I actually do. My breakfast every morning, it's a mixture of protein powder, Greek yogurt, and blueberries that I mash together by hand, and it looks like that.
Okay, that's. I was about to say that's literally what I have for breakfast every morning because I'm trying to look more like you.
Oh my gosh.
He pointed to Nicole, by the way.
But I don't mash it together with my hands like a psycho. I use a blender.
No. That's the problem,
no,
man.
You
that's
gotta
the problem.
Mash it.
Yeah, because here's the thing. Subcutaneous nutrient absorption. It's bro science. Go to a bodybuilding.com chat room and you'll learn so much.
I already learned so much from bodybuilding.com chat rooms. Usually nothing about bodybuilding. I'm going there to see like what prescriptions interact and, you know, what's...
Yes.
I get also the weirdest miscellaneous info there.
A lot of upsetting political opinions in bodybuilding.com chat rooms to tell you that much.
Yeah.
Not clear. A great hub for moderation.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
There's another food movie, though, that I have watched more than any other food movie, especially in the last 5 years.
Can I guess what it is?
Please.
Is it Burnt?
Yes.
You trash person.
Yes, it is Bradley Cooper's Burnt. Andrew, no. You've seen the movie?
Yeah, I've seen it. And I don't think that that movie loves food as much.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. It is maybe the worst food movie ever made.
Oh, well, okay. Well, that explains why you watch it so much. What? What?
You hate watch it.
Well,
you
I don't, but it. I don't know if it's a, I don't know if it's exactly a hate watch because, okay, has anyone seen Troll 2?
No.
Yes, of course.
Of course he's seen Troll 2. You haven't seen Troll 2?
I have no reason to watch Troll 1 or Troll 2.
Oh my God. Oh, wait, no, that's Hobgoblins.
No, that's Troll 2. That's they're eating him.
Are you talking about the movie with the leprechaun?
No. So Troll 2, it's about goblins. They live in the town of Nilbog. It's referenced in a Tyler, the Creator music video.
Okay.
Goblin. But anyways, that is actually a weird allegory for vegetarianism.
I guess, yeah, you're right.
What portal did I just step into?
Because the trolls are like, the goblins are like, you humans eating stinking, rotten meat flesh. And then the goblins turn the humans into plant-based food.
Oh, well, there's a positive message to that.
Well, now you ruined it for me.
Sorry, Nicole.
Well, now I can't watch it.
Speaking of sequels of campy 80s horror movies that suck, have you seen Silent Night, Deadly Night 2?
No, I have not.
Oh, just go to YouTube and search for Garbage Day from Silent Night.
Oh, yes.
Garbage Day. It's one of my favorite bad movie moments ever.
All right, so, I've watched Troll 2 probably 5 or 6 times. Nicole's watching YouTube clips while doing the podcast.
I'm watching Garbage Day.
Garbage Day. It'll make your day, seriously.
It's maybe my favorite movie of all time, and this is, it's the Point Break remake. 2015 Point Break remake.
Help.
And I'll tell you why. It is so stimulating to me. It gives me an emotional reaction at so many turns because it's such a bad movie. It's about these Buddhist eco-terrorists. They took the original movie with Keanu Reeves and Patrick Swayze and a great Gary Busey was at least somewhat subdued, right? It was surfers robbing a bank to fund their surfing. And then the remake of it, they're these Buddhist eco-terrorists who are trying to conquer the world's most extreme sports challenges so they can reach nirvana. And it's utterly insane. They crank everything up to 11, but that's how I feel about the movie Burnt, where everything is so dramatic at every turn. And that movie hates food.
It does.
And also, if you look at the executive producers on that, Gordon Ramsay and Mario Batali, both of whom I believe hate food.
No way.
As opposed to someone,
I had no idea that
they were the executive, consulting producers, which is a great, story. If you watch Chef, you can name, we just rattled off the names of about 8 dishes that they made. I can't name one thing that Bradley Cooper cooks in Burnt.
Yeah, I don't remember anything.
Yeah, no, I remember there is there a lobster pasta or something? People ask for food from that, and I think the only scene that I liked was the one where he blows up on the manager for mistreating somebody, but he's mistreating everybody. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
Down to everything. So Bradley Cooper, he plays the ultimate sort of Marco Pierre White would be
totally. That's what I was going to say.
The archetype. He's the one who raised Gordon Ramsay, and he's the reason Gordon Ramsay is the person that he is. So he plays this bad boy chef who's going for his third Michelin star, which is not even how the Michelin star system works. So they're already proving that they have no idea about the actual food world, or they're not trying to give their viewers any respect in thinking that they might understand how it works. So he's going for his third Michelin star, but then he has a huge breakdown because he's addicted to drugs and he owes the mafia money. And so to punish himself, he goes to New Orleans to shuck 1 million oysters. That's his punishment. And the opening shot of the movie is him shucking an oyster, writing down 1 million, throwing his apron on the ground and going, "I'm out, boys," and hopping on a freaking motorcycle. I mean, it is so bad that it is good.
It's like the end of Dexter in reverse and worse.
It's, but I mean, that to me, it's such a stark contrast between what makes a good food movie, a great food movie, Chef, and a absolute terrible food movie. And this is reflected in streams and box office as well. In a bad movie like Burnt, where Burnt, you can't name a single dish because they never tell you what he's making. What they do is Uma Thurman plays a food critic, and she eats a bite of food and just goes, and that's the only indication you get that he is a good chef. She goes, and then they do B-roll of people eating and they're going, and it's
you know how you do at a restaurant.
Just softly moaning whale sounds throughout.
I recently went to Danielle and it was just a moan fest.
You know what we haven't talked about, guys, yet? The animated classic Ratatouille.
Oh.
Which I just watched maybe like a month ago for the first time, and I was so impressed.
Lucky.
I loved it. It was beautiful.
That is another movie that loves food. I mean, obviously, just because it's about...
Truly loves food.
Yeah, it's about, you know, somebody's... willingness, somebody as in a rat, their willingness to overcome any obstacle, namely being a rat, to be a great chef. and performs the miracle of seeing a kitchen full of rats cooking and making it not gross somehow. I don't, like, Pixar really are miracle workers,
an
because they like, I know people with like genuine phobias of rodents like that, and they watched it like, oh, I wonder what they're making.
I wonder if that has like changed the discourse around restaurant cleanliness, and now people see rats in a kitchen, because if I see a rat in a professional kitchen, I'm just gonna assume that's a Ratatouille rat. I'm be like, no, that's the head chef. He's out from the hat.
I saw them wash the little hands.
No, I can differentiate, you know, Pixar animation to a real life rat.
A house can float away on a balloon.
Oh, okay.
Well, you put enough balloons on a house, it can float
toys
away.
Toys talk when you're not around.
I saw that in Mythbusters.
Are you talking about small soldiers?
What?
Josh,
please tell me someone's seen Small Soldiers.
I've seen Small Soldiers. What did you think she was referencing?
She said toys talk when you're not around. That's a Small Soldiers reference.
That's Toy Story.
Never heard of it.
And the small soldiers talk when the people are around. They talk in their faces.
That's right. That was a big part of the movie was them interacting with the people.
Yeah.
And then the small soldiers tried to kill. Anyway,
I was such a young kid when I saw that, and I couldn't believe how violent it was. That, remember when he shoots like the corn holders in that dude's leg? And I was like, I'm not old enough to be watching this.
That's going
to
get sepsis. That's going to get infected. That person's dead.
Oh, no.
What were we talking about?
We were talking about Ratatouille, but I have another classic.
Wait, hold
film.
On. Can I talk about Ratatouille?
Sure, if you want to.
I blew the
to.
Opportunity because I started talking about small soldiers.
Yeah, you really. It's okay. We can backtrack. Continue.
The big part of Ratatouille that really hit me was Anton Ego, the critic.
Yes.
Who, so recently we did this video on YouTube. We started doing these new things where we just put the camera on me and they go, hey, Josh, talk for about 15 minutes.
And you start big beefs with Gordon Ramsay. I've seen it.
Yeah.
Not only Gordon Ramsay, there's more.
Yeah, exactly. But what was I doing? I was talking about this interaction I had with Guy Fieri when I crashed his child's birthday party back in the day. And just being very impressed with, you know, how generous this man was with his time and all that. And this is coming off of Pete Wells absolutely eviscerating American Kitchen and Bar in Times Square in that thing. And I was like, you know, a food writer. I was writing restaurant criticisms. I would be unnecessarily cruel. I once referred to a restaurant sauce as being like a Jamba Juice razzmatazz smoothie that had been left in a 7-Eleven parking lot for 3 days. Which
brutal.
Yeah, burned. Got him. But no, I thought that's like what made you clever was being able to tear something down from your stupid ivory tower while you were making $30,000 a year working in a gross cubicle that sold 65-cent expired Diet Cokes in the vending machine.
Yeah, you told
that was
me that
a fun
story.
Office to work in. But anyways, point is, big thing with Anton Ego when he says, you know, it is always more beautiful to create than to criticize. The job of a critic is to sit there, blah, blah, blah. And in this Guy Fieri video, I just plagiarized Anton Ego and did not notice it. And then a couple of people called me out, so good for them. But that was a huge takeaway for me for Ratatouille that meant a lot.
It's intrinsic. It became an intrinsic like motto for you.
Internalized it.
And as for Guy Fieri, I mean, like that takedown was brutal in the New York Times. And my thought there is like, find me a good restaurant in Times Square. Like, it's not, yeah. it's not like, yes. you know, what is this garbage yeah. he's putting out in the dining mecca that is Times Square, like right next to an Olive Garden and a, ugh. So I got no beef with Vietti. Like somebody asked me about him recently when I was doing a live stream for colleges and they were like, what's your opinion on Guy Fieri, expecting me to like tear him apart? And I'm like, I would never get in the way of that man earning. That guy makes money and he's figured honestly. Out how to build an empire. I'm not going to get in the way of him and his bag. That sounded wrong.
No, get the no, sack. Totally. Get in the way of him and his sack. So, but I mean, God, my big thing with that is, I mean, I grew up, the fanciest restaurant I'd ever been to until I was like 18 was the Olive Garden, you know? And I think that's the experience for like a deceptive amount of people in America, right?
Yeah, sure.
And I mean, I grew up in Orange County too, which is like, you know, a somewhat moneyed area, but yeah. it has so much money that it does like culture in a way. Mm-hmm. And so I just, so many like restaurants serve different purposes for different people. It's like a Guy Fieri restaurant. It's not meant to stand up with Danielle, with Le Bernardin, with, you know, restaurants like that. It's meant to serve, you know, ahi tuna tacos and spinach artichoke dip yeah. with some jazzed up Guy Fieri seasoning yeah. for $17.
To non-native New Yorkers, to people who aren't used to,
exactly.
to people who are visiting and they want something like, you know, Americana, like where's the harm in that? I don't, yeah. anyway.
That's what I'm saying. It's a pure value exchange. And I think it's great.
Yeah. When I was in Mexico, I got a coupon to go into Guy Fieri restaurant.
Yeah.
I unfortunately did not have time to go.
Oh, man. Yo, when I was pretty inebriated on this Carnival cruise, because they sell the all-you-can-drink tickets on the Carnival cruise line.
Okay.
But it turns out they cap you at 15 drinks.
Oh.
And I will say, you think you can't get there.
In a day or the whole trip?
In a day. When here's the thing. There's a difference between a Long Island iced tea, that's one drink, and a Mike's Hard Lemonade at 3.2% is still one drink. Mm-hmm. Turns out you drink 12 Mike's Hard Lemonades throughout the day. It's not that hard. But anyways, you get the sugar shocks a little bit. You get the shakes and the fingy tips. But they had a Guy Fieri. Guy Fieri has a restaurant, a burger restaurant on every Carnival cruise line.
Oh, wow.
And it's very similar to a normal burger restaurant with Guy Fieri's face plastered on it.
Yeah.
But it was really fine. I mean, it was, you know, perfectly okay and acceptable. And again, the man's out there making money, leaving generational wealth for his family.
I mean, you were 15 mics deep. So I don't know, man.
How bad could it have possibly been?
No, I guess you're right.
What are other food movies?
I got a good food movie for you guys. You ever heard of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory?
Oh,
hell yeah.
That's a good horror movie.
That is a great horror movie.
That is a great horror movie.
The boat scene? Well, in the first one, I didn't really care for the Johnny Depp remake, personally.
Same. I thought the Johnny Depp remake was fine, but it I mean, it couldn't compare to Gene Wilder.
Nothing
but also,
compares to Gene Wilder.
As far as like a movie that made me see the like wonderment and the magical element of food, which is something that we do here at Mythical Kitchen, which is the YouTube channel that we run. Stop by. We got new videos. But no, I mean, seeing so many things like the chewing gum that is flavored like an entire meal, right? So you have the blueberry pie, the roast beef, and the soup flavored chewing gum. Seeing that in like a movie, now we're making stuff like that for our jobs.
Totally. My first like food like scene that did that for me was Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Whenever they're eating like the snake and the beetle and the monkey brain, I was like, holy crap, how are they doing this? Because there's no way that's real monkey brain. Mm-hmm. Is it real monkey brain? Like, it was crazy to me. So I had that same experience, but with Indiana Jones.
Yeah, there's kind of this element of watching food movies to see the actual food styling. Like,
yes,
now I watch these and I'm like, oh, how did in Hook, how did they make, you know, the imaginary pie? Like, I wonder what food dyes, what materials they were using.
Yeah, like in Hannibal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Every time I watch the show Hannibal, I'm just like,
there's an amazing blog from the food stylist of Hannibal, like who actually talks about the breakdown of how they've made everything. And a lot of it is really rooted in great culinary technique. Like, obviously they have to do a lot of weird stuff to make it work on television. They have to paint it with lacquer or whatever. But like, you know, the food stylist really cares about food on that show. So it's a great read when you look into it. I also do want to touch on Big Night real quick, which is my favorite food movie. Mostly for the last scene. Either of you guys not seen that one or?
Missed that one, Chief.
No,
That's our bad.
Sorry, Andrew.
You mind if I spoil it for you?
Please do.
All right.
Please.
Well, you know, these brothers in Brooklyn in the 50s, I think, you know, just undergo a major blow to their egos and to their relationship and to their business. And they're probably going to go out of business because they wanted to host this gigantic feast for Louis Prima, who never ended up showing up because they thought that would drum up press for the restaurant and it would save it. But he never shows. So they end up just making, you know, this incredible feast. Like, it's one of the best food scenes in film history for just their dinner guests. And it becomes about the connectedness of that meal and the importance of that meal to its guests. One person ends up sobbing at the end because their mother was such a terrible cook growing up. And the very last scene, these brothers have gotten into a drunken fist fight and they wake up in the morning hungover. One of them is sleeping in the kitchen. And in one single shot, one of them fries up eggs and serves it on a little loaf of bread and they eat together in utter silence. And it's just their little way of just starting to heal the massive wound from the night before is with a little, you know, very simple, just eggs, salt on a baguette. And that is their like way of just trying to start healing together. And that to me is the most beautiful scene in the movie. I just want to talk about that. So you should definitely go watch that movie. Another great hangover movie, very low key.
That's so beautiful. I mean, that scene with the eggs, it's like the cycle continues no matter what happened. Yeah. There is always food. That is always a thing sort of connecting us. I mean, that's a huge thing. Like all of us, we've chosen such a bizarre, I would be willing to call it a stupid career path in a very beautiful way that we all love very dearly.
Yeah.
I mean, that connects us so much to the movies that we see on screen, even if it is a terrible Disney movie with a $100,000 budget made in 2004. You know, we're all seeing something of ourselves. Like, it means a lot to us reflected on screen and food. And I think that's beautiful.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, Nicole and Andrew, we've heard what you and I have to say. Now it's time to find out what other wacky ideas are rattling out there in the Twitterverse. It's time for a segment we call
Opinions are like casseroles.
I said it too.
Yeah, Andrew said it. There he is.
What did he say?
Well, I'll say it's hard for him to join because he's on Zoom.
Yeah.
We're not
you
in
mean
the same
saying
room.
The thing?
Yeah, yeah.
You want to try it again? See if we can do it more synced up?
Yeah. Okay. Let's do it. All right, Andrew, you were pitchy on the first one.
Sorry.
It's time for a segment we call
Opinions are like casseroles.
Why? We've done this. This is like our 60th episode or something. We can't. All right. First up, we got R.Schionti. Do you think Parmesan cheese belongs on any seafood or fish pasta?
Yes.
I told Andrew we'd get the first crack.
Oh, sorry, Andrew.
No, it's okay. I had to think. We had to fill the airwaves somehow. I personally don't go in for that. Seafood with most dairy, in fact, like cheese in general and seafood, not crazy about it. Like lobster mac and cheese, I don't fully understand. I'll eat it, but I don't really get the appeal of. Parmesan in particular, that's such a harsh cheese for such a gentle thing. sorry, I got weird there. I'm trying to think.
Nah, F me up, fam.
I'm trying to think of a seafood that Parmesan would work really well on.
Well, I mean, Parmesan for me, it's like, it's hardly a cheese.
Yeah, Parmesan is a seasoning.
It is. No, honestly, Parmesan's like, it's like miso to me. Like, it's.
I agree.
It's just salt and umami and like, it's so crystalline and that you're not getting so much dairy funk. Like, to me. Especially or something like a pecorino. It's just like acid, salt, umami.
Yeah, I agree that Parmesan isn't as combative of a cheese with seafood.
I think for some reason, to me, it like works.
Yeah, me too.
But also, it's a very combative cheese. Because it's very strong.
But it's not all the time.
It's kind of like I recently made lobster thermidor, and that is like lobster in a cream sauce topped with Gruyere.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I got to say, kind of weird. But, you know, just the answer to most of these questions for me is going to be live your life.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, I mean, honestly, that's the key. But there are a lot of Mexican seafood dishes that use a fair amount of cheese in them.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're talking about a fish that works really well with cheese, smoked marlin.
Ooh, that sounds
tacos
great,
de marlin.
Yeah.
They call it jamón del mar,
so
the
good.
Ham of the sea, because they literally smoke it and cure it like ham. So it's kind of the combination of like a very fatty, fleshy tuna that has the texture and flavor of ham. And then they do these like, you know, hard griddled tacos with like a kind of melty white cheese in it.
so good.
Unreal.
That sounds really good. My dear friend Rick Martinez, who has a new show coming out on my channel.
Oh, exciting.
Oh, cool.
He's down in Mexico. He's in Mezatlan, which is a lovely coastal town in Mexico, and they are huge about smoked tuna there, where it's like smoked to this cherry red consistency, and they make, I think, tacos out of it as well.
Oh, that's awesome. No, I'm really stoked for that show. I've loved Rick for so long, and I love seeing you bring other talent into the fold in your channel too. That's
Me
super
too.
Exciting.
Thanks, guys.
Very
That's
cool.
A segue for you to plug anything you want, by the way.
Cookware. Cookware is out now.
Buy Babish knives.
Fart E-Man says, avocado, mango, and cucumber with sriracha is the best combination, but why? Andrew, why?
I can't answer why, sir.
Tell them why they have
Tell
these beliefs.
Tell them why.
Oh, because you're, I don't know, because you have damaged taste, but I don't know. so, okay, I'm sorry. Avocado, mango, cucumber.
And yes, with sriracha. Is the best combination.
You know, what? I'm going to try that. That doesn't sound terrible to me. It doesn't sound great by any means. I think the cucumber is what throws me. I think avocado, mango, I'm like, okay, we're in sushi. We're in, what's it called? The raw seafood dish.
Ceviche?
Ceviche territory. But I don't know about that cucumber. We'll see.
You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of like tahin.
Yep.
Like if this person, because you know
the fruteros in LA.
If you bought sriracha powder, which exists, you could just put the sriracha powder on and have the same tahin experience with just more Asian flavors.
Andrew, you familiar with tahin?
I can't say that I am.
Sending
you a bottle.
It's honestly, yeah, we should. So I mean, it's huge in Southern California. If you go to there are fruit carts everywhere in Southern California, and cucumber is really popular. It'll be like cucumber, mango,
coconut,
pineapple, fresh
everything,
coconut,
just everything.
And you can get tahin, which is like a chili lime salt
that
you dump on fruit. It's beautiful, but I mean, this reminds me of chamoy. Chamoy is another
chamoy.
Thing that's like a
yes.
chili and pickled fruit puree.
Ugh, I love chamoy.
This violently red sauce that is delicious on fruit. But the thing that bumps me with sriracha is the amount of fermented, like garlic and sugar.
Totally.
And so for me, the garlic might clash with all this. And I think what they're looking for is just tahin and chamoy on fruit, which is already perfect.
I mean, that sounds delicious. And if there's one thing I've learned from just the past 10 seconds of this conversation and when we collabed with Alvin Kylon is that I know so little about the cuisine of Southern California, maybe because I've spent really
gotta
time there.
Got to come through.
But I learned about like 7 new dishes that day, and now I've just learned about like 3 more.
you got to come out, man. Yeah. I would love to take you around.
On my way.
I don't like New York. It makes me claustrophobic.
Hey.
It's very, the tall buildings are very scary.
I don't know. I've never been to New York. Isn't that sad?
Come on out. I'm in Brooklyn. Later. It's shorter out here.
Yay.
All right, what we got? At A. Mayberry, soup in a bread bowl with the lid on is a sandwich.
Disagree. Disagree. Disagree.
Maybe
at best
maybe
it's
like
a stuffed item of some sort, but like a sandwich? Can you eat it like a sandwich? Or is there any sandwich whose contents are entirely liquid?
Hold on.
French dip.
If this is a can, you eat it like a sandwich, yes. I have eaten a whole clam chowder bread bowl. We did a big like clam chowder bread bowl party at my apartment in college with 10 dudes because This is how we partied. And we made as a giant thing a very stodgy clam chowder, and we went out drinking, and you know, someone was working on the soup all day, and then we put it in bread bowls, and I just picked it up and put the lid on, and I would take a bite and then go,
ew, man.
And I'd take a bite and go, and so you can't eat it like a sandwich.
That's different.
If this
that's
is
different.
Purely a matter of practicality.
That's different.
Sounds like vomit.
You could eat a coconut that way, but you're not going to call it a coconut
True.
A sandwich, are you?
True. No, you're right. I'm talking about feasibility here.
I will sooner say that a bread bowl with lid on is a coconut than a sandwich.
I'm willing to write that into the canon of our show right now.
Okay. Conron 28 says, pineapple and cream cheese sandwiches aren't as weird as you think. You don't know how I think. That is weird. I don't like that.
Again, I'm not gonna judge a person for what they decide to put on a sandwich, but I'm under no obligation to try it myself.
Mm-mm.
Hold on. You grew up, Nicole.
I know what you're gonna say. Can I tell you what you're gonna say? Are you gonna talk about the cottage cheese and the cottage cheese Knudsen with the little pineapple on the
yes.
side? I knew you were gonna bring
and you
that
love
up.
That, don't you?
No, I didn't. My mom loved it.
Oh, I get you and your mom confused all the time. You're so similar. You look like your mother.
You're so weird.
You know what I would get down with sooner than that is marshmallow fluff and pineapple.
Oh. Yeah, I'm down with that too.
Oh.
That makes a lot more sense than cream cheese or cottage cheese.
I grew up with a lot of like jam and cream cheese on a bagel. That was my like after school snack that my bubby would make me.
Yeah, I guess.
On the frozen Sara Lee bagel that had been in there for 4 years, you know? Puts it in the toaster oven, still icy in the middle. No, bring back weird pineapple foods. Mm-mm. When white people discovered the pineapple in 1954 with the brutal annexation of Hawaii, that stays in the edit because it's true. And then they started just being like, how can we ruin this delicious fruit? So the original idea before the Filet-O-Fish to give Catholics a reason to eat at McDonald's on a Friday was the Hula Burger, which is just a slice of canned pineapple, a slice of American cheese in a bun, and that was it.
Yeah.
And so, like, back in the 50s, when people literally didn't know what to do with this exotic fruit, there was so much just, like, horrifying experimentation, and I would love to bring that back. Same with bananas. I think we should be wrapping bananas in ham and putting hollandaise on top.
That sounds horrific.
Oh, God, we've killed it.
I've seen that advertisement, too.
Yeah.
You know, something I just made for today's episode, actually, was tepache. Which is absolutely
interesting.
A gorgeous use of pineapple.
Yeah. So tepache is the, it's like a fermented Mexican, I don't know what you'd call it. I mean, it's almost fermented like a beer or wine.
I think technically speaking, it's a wine, but it's pineapple wine. It's barely alcoholic, like 1% to 2%. But you just basically chop up a whole pineapple, skin included, add water and brown sugar and maybe some, clove and star anise and a chili if you want, and let it ferment for like 2 days. And you got this like really lovely to drink, very lightly carbonated, barely alcoholic thing. It's really, really refreshing.
Yum.
Man, come out to LA, smuggle some homemade tepache on board that aeroplane, and we'll take you all around and find some food to pair that with.
Bring 3 ounces of tepache with me on the plane.
And finally bring multiple 3 ounce bottles.
Yeah, tape them to your body. Put them in the crevices.
Yeah, okay.
Put them in the folds.
Rig up like a complicated straw system between each one.
It's
like wires.
That's smart.
Yeah, yeah, that's
for
a great
once.
Idea.
And on that note, thank you for listening to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich. And thank you so much for joining us, Andrew. Be sure to tune in to the Babish Jabber. And thank you so much for joining us, Andrew. Be sure to tune in to the Babish Culinary Universe on YouTube. Also, I know you released a cookware line recently. Where can our listeners check that out?
Hell yes, brother. BingingWithBabish.com/cookware. It's available now.
That's BingingWithBabish.com/cookware. And that's available now.
That's what he just said.
I do too many ad reads on the podcast, and that's how they do.
That is literally what he just said.
And if you want to hear more from us here in the Mythical Kitchen, we got new episodes for you every Wednesday.
If you want to be featured on Opinions Are Like Casseroles, you can hit us up on Twitter at Mythical Chef or @Hendizadeh with the hashtag Opinion Casserole.
And for more Mythical Kitchen, check us out on YouTube where we launch new videos every week.
And of course, if you want to share pictures of your dishes, hit us up on Instagram at Mythical Kitchen.
That's Instagram at MYTHICALKITCHEN.
You are a human troll too.
Troll too.
You are troll too.
Let's return to Nilbog.